Hey everyone, I am Reva and just want to take a moment and thank you for listening to our studio podcast. Although we are here in Greenville, South Carolina, we are grateful for your support to see the message of Jesus go out all over the world. In case you are not aware, we have a YouTube channel which you can find the link in our podcast bio. We hope you enjoy this week's talk and it encourages you and it helps you to be the human God designed you to be. So with that, let's get right to it.
Okay, good morning, almost afternoon. It is afternoon. Good afternoon, studio. I am excited to be able to speak with you today. I have been provoked in the last couple months as I'm going through my yearly Bible reading plan, gone through 1 Kings, 2 Kings. I was stuck on Elijah for a long time. I couldn't get past chapters 17, 18, and 19. And then I'm on Elisha, and as I'm reading it, you know when you read the Bible, stories you've read before, sometimes you read it another time and something captivates you that you didn't notice before and you can't move on. Well, I tell you that I have been captivated and provoked, and I'm going to share with you and provoke you this morning because I really feel the Lord not just inviting us into something, but calling us and maybe even pushing us in. Is that okay theologically, being pushed? I feel like this is an opportunity for us. How many people feel like God has brought you here for a reason? To studio, to Greenville area. Greenville's the most unique place that I don't think that I've ever been anywhere that I would say, I don't know, good percentage, 40%, less than half, but a good amount of people that I talk to, I introduce myself or meet them, and their story is, I have lived here for X amount of time, let's say average of less than 10 years. But sometimes it'll be 12, 15 in this area. And I say, oh, what brought you to the area? Did you have family here? No, I didn't have family here. Why did you move here? I don't know, I just felt drawn, like Greenville, you know, just I should go to Greenville. And then other people go, it's either they just came randomly and felt drawn, or people are like, no, I actually felt like the Lord was saying, go to Greenville. And then I, all the way to other people just feeling like they've had a dream, a vision, really specific spiritual things that have brought them to Greenville. And most of them say, but I don't know exactly for what. I'm like, it's so interesting. And many of you might be a part of that. Some of you have lived here your whole life, and you've gotten to watch so many people come into this area that has a highlight over it. Whether you believe in God or not, there is a highlight over this area. I know that it's made a lot of the list of the best city for this, the top 10 city for this. But I'm saying that even beyond that, there's a highlight over this area. I mean, raise your hand if you have been a part of the moving here in the last 10 years, people. See, look around. And when I walk down the streets of Greenville, it feels very similar to that as well. And all of that to say, I am so thankful to be a part of this place that is in the middle of transformation. And that's what's happening. Things are changing very rapidly and hopefully for the better. But I do believe we're in a moment that is a tipping point that we can be a part of it should we choose to be a part of it. Because in the midst of this, we're here at this church, and I am undone by the level of generosity that I experience. You are very kind people. So many different areas, I hear stories. Even from this last week, we had friends come back from being away, and I thought, what time are they getting home? It was evening. I wonder what we're going to eat for dinner. I should probably give them food or make them food. And I didn't. That's my confession. I did nothing about it. And, So my daughter came home and said, oh, so-and-so went over and brought them dinner. And I was like, that is so kind. I thought it, someone else did it. But that's the kind of people you are. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it, but I didn't. I missed that one. And then I hear people like their fences getting broken, need to be repaired, or their roofs. And then I hear of people, oh, we got a crew together. We went over and helped them. That is amazing to know people who will do that. We even helped someone move this last Saturday, and I thought that I got there, you know, pretty close to the time we were supposed to be there. But there was already a crew moving stuff out of their house as fast as they could. We got this. And I'm like, man, you guys are not just moving. You are passionately moving early on a Saturday morning. I mean, those are good friends to have. So I just want to tell you, whether you get to experience it as much, but you are surrounded by a lot of kind, generous people. And I am thankful to be surrounded by all of you. But it's weird, in the midst of that, I randomly hear these other things. And it's more of an angst. Like, I came here and I said yes, and I just want to live a life with deep meaning. And I don't have that now. And what does God, I'm here, but now what am I doing? And so just so you know, in the middle of this amazing stuff, that's a narrative I hear as well. And so as I'm reading through the Bible and these stories, I feel very provoked. And this morning, I want to share that with you because no matter where you're at in any of the things I just mentioned, I believe that God is calling us into a new space. Because see here, we're in Greenville, and I love the coffee shops. I love the food. I love the festivals. But God didn't move us here just for that. And if we are thinking it was just for that, but it's not meeting all of our needs or desires, then we missed it. And so that's why today, I'll share it with you, but I want to stir some stuff up in us. Do you guys okay to be stirred? That's what we're going to do. So thank you, Lord, for your heart. Thank you for what you call us into. You're faithful. We trust you. And I thank you that you've brought us here. And we just say that we have eyes to see you and ears to hear you, Lord. Yeah, and I thank you that you didn't just bring us here for nothing, but that we get to be a part of something that's important to you, but also something that you're highlighting. Yeah, and I just say, come and speak to us. In Jesus' mighty name, amen. I'm going to start in 2 Kings chapter 4, and this is one of the chapters that I've been stuck on, so I'm going to share it with you. And the context of this, it's Elisha the prophet, and it's when he meets the Shunammite woman. So you're going to hear Elisha a lot, the Shunammite woman, and there is a boy. And there is extraordinary faith. It is in the context of relationship, and you get to see Christ-like living, the kind of Christ-like living that just inspires you, but also provokes you. We're going to start in verse 8 and read verse 8 and 9 of 2 Kings 4. Verse 8 says, "Now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a noble woman, and she persuaded him to eat some food. So it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn there to eat some food." Now that is kindness. As often as he passed by, he would turn and eat some food. I'm like, I would like you as a neighbor. And she said to her husband, "Look now, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly." Can you say regularly? Regularly. That's an important part of this story that we don't want to miss. Yeah. Elijah was there and he passed by regularly. "Please let us make a small upper room on the wall and let us put a bed for him there, and a table and a chair and a lampstand, so it will be whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there." So Elijah is there regularly, and once he's there, he goes to the woman after a while and says, "What can I do for you? What do you want?" And she doesn't really take him up on his offer. He has a servant there with him, and the servant says, "Well, I've noticed that she doesn't have a son and her husband is old." And so Elijah says to the Shunammite woman, "In the next year, you're going to be holding a son." And because of her, by her response, we can tell that was a tender space in her life. And I want to take a moment to talk about Bible stories. We read the Bible and it's so fun to see what happens and to see the choices that people make. But I want to tell you, it is so different living those things. Like, even as I read this story, I want to do our best to try to put ourselves in this situation, because there is some weird stuff that takes place here. But there is a lot of stuff that we dream of as well. We're going to see dead things come to life. Like, who does not want that in their life? Like, we all dream of living a life like that. But there is a context to all of this. So Elijah's at this woman's house. She's very kind to him. He tells her she's going to have a son. And her response in verse 16, she says, "No, my Lord, do not lie to your maidservant." Why would she say that when he speaks a promise over her? I would say that if I was afraid. If I was like, no, I can't hope for that again. Do you know that I'm old and I don't have a son? Do you know the words that you're speaking? They were words of promise. Something that is to come but has not yet come. So a year passes and she has a son. And time goes on, that son grows. And this is the part that gets a little hairy. Hairy meaning a little odd, a little amazing. It's a little bit of everything. But even before I read this part of the story, I just want you to say, I don't know what I would do in that situation. I hope that I would do something that full of faith, because even if this person was alive, it would be weird. And he's not. So we're going to pick up in verse 34, 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 34 through 35. Oh, actually, let me give you context first. So the boy grows. He goes out into the field one day and says there's reapers there. And he goes to his dad and says, my head. He runs to the dad, and the dad takes him to his mom. He lays on his with his mom, and he dies because he gets hurt so bad. So this promise of a boy is now dead. So she is, imagine, so your promised son who you were even afraid to believe for is now dead. So she runs to Elijah, wants to go to Elijah, and she continues to call Elijah the man of God. I need to go to the man of God. And she goes to him, and she holds on to his feet, and because he's like, oh, no, my servant is going to go put my staff on him, and he's going to get made well. And she's like, no, I'm not going to leave you. And she tells Elijah this. She caught him by the feet, and in her pain and desperation, she ran to him. And in verse 28 says, did I ask a son of my Lord? Did I not say, do not deceive me? This is a woman in despair. So she is at Elijah's feet. And then finally, Elijah agrees and goes, okay, I'm going to go to see this, your dead son. And what she did when her son was dead, she brought him up into Elijah's bed at her house. And so Elijah goes up, verse 34 and verse 35 says, and he went up and lay on the child, and he put his mouth on his mouth, his eye on his eyes, and his hands on his hands, and he stretched himself out on the child, and the flesh of the child became warm. He returned and walked back and forth in the house, and again went up and stretched himself out on him second time. Then the child sneezed seven times, and the child opened his eyes. Super incredible. I want to encourage you as well. We were just praying for healing a moment ago, and we took a break and check it, and then we went back and prayed again, because sometimes you want to pray again, even if it's not completely better, because so the child got warm first time, and the second time sneezed seven times and opened his eyes. And so just encourage us to know, don't stop. Just because it didn't happen right away. So looking at this story, I'm provoked by many things, but the first one I want to talk about is proximity. Proximity is closeness, and there's so many things that we can learn and take in because of proximity. When you're close to something, you, through your senses, can take them in yourself. It's not just through your ears of hearing, but you can actually smell, you can feel, you can observe, and you can experience yourself. That kind of information is very different than someone else telling you. You don't have to wonder, oh, I wonder if it really was like that, because you experience it yourself when you're that close. We've had friends that have moved into impoverished neighborhoods because that was their heart, was to go and be with the people and be a light and also try to help the neighborhoods, and they wanted to be a part of it. But in that journey, we've had friends that gotten beat up as well. They had young kids with us, but we are raising our young kids somewhere in a safe place in Northern California, and they were choosing being right down the city of Oakland. And it was a totally different story, but that's what they chose to give their lives to, because they cared that much to be in proximity. And there's a lady, Michelle, her name is Michelle Warren, and she did the same. Her and her family have chosen to live in communities where they are close to the impoverished. And I love a statement that she says. She wrote a book called The Power of Proximity. But she says, it takes proximity, for it's only proximity that gets us close to the pain of an issue that is radically changes our perspective and demands a deeper response. I am provoked even in this story by the proximity that Elijah has to this woman and what takes place in the context. So when I read that, there's a couple things that I get out of the proximity. First, because he was close to her, they had relationship. She was kind. She cared for him. He came and stayed with her. They got to know each other enough to know that she did not have a son, and to recognize that she probably wanted one. And that's, it just came out of just the context of knowing her and knowing their situation. Secondly, there was a life exchange. He got fed, he was cared for, and she got a promise because she had a man of God who had faith, who spoke life and brought truth, who she hosted in her home. It's crazy what happens when we open up our lives to each other and we get close. In the space of proximity, beautiful things can transpire when you have faith and love and hope. Jesus was God's heart for proximity. God always wanted to be with us. You know that Jesus was even referred to as Emmanuel, God with us. That's one of his names. That was his heart. He didn't even just want to be with us. He wanted to come and fill us and live inside of us. So proximity is the heart of God, and beautiful things take place in that space. The other thing that takes place in this story is in the space of proximity, the most intimate space, something that's dead comes to life. An intimate meaning he didn't just come there, he laid on a dead boy. That is crazy. And I can't imagine laying on a live person, let alone a dead person. And yet he was willing to lay his life over in that space, in an intimate space. But he saw a dead person come to life. And I love that the Shunammite woman refers to him as a man of God. I just need to get close to the man of God. I'll bring my dead boy and just put him on the bed of the man of God. And I'm not going to let the man of God go. It makes me wonder about the level of anointing that he walked in and the level of hope and faith that he released wherever he went. And I read that, it inspires me. And then I think, what do people experience when I walk by? What do people experience that are in relationship with me? And what about the places that I go and the places I work? Do I release life? Do I bring hope where I go? Because that's the opportunity that's at place. So even the questions that I ask today, they're the questions that I ask myself. And I feel provoked and even more than invited, but even pushed in. Because what happens when we get close to God? You know, we're all sitting here. You're sitting here because you either know God or you're about to know him. And there's nothing like knowing the King of Kings. There's nothing like knowing the Prince of Peace. A peace that heals. A peace that brings clarity. A love. A love that fills the holes in your life and the broken spaces. He actually loves on them so much that it puts them back together. Like there's nothing else I've ever wanted in life more than knowing God. Once I got to know him, you couldn't convince me anything else. What happens when we get close to him? We get made well. I love Mark chapter 5, verse 25 through 29. It's the story of the woman with the issue of blood. Verse 25 says, now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years. That is a long time. Hopefully she drank a lot of water. And had suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. That is a desperate woman. And I love what she did in her desperation. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in a crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. Immediately the fountain of blood was dried up, and she felt her body, that she was healed from the affliction and the suffering. Thank you, Lord. You know what happens when we get close to Jesus? We get made well. That's the best thing we could do. When we're in places of affliction, when we're in desperate places, sometimes our tendency would be to run and to hide, but the best thing we do is just get close, because God in his love is there. He's so powerful. It's time for us to get close to Jesus, to get made well, to get delivered from affliction. Anyone feeling desperate here today, you're in a good spot because you're at church. And church is about singing as people, but really we are going after God, and we're going after the fullness of everything that Jesus gave his life for. We're not just coming to have a social club here. So if you need to get made well, we are going to pray for you today. If there is areas that you feel so discouraged because something hasn't happened yet, we are going to pray and watch God come and touch you as you touch him. So proximity is a really big thing. So we know that Elijah impacted those around him with his life, but I want to zero in on one thing. And this thing, this is a big challenge for me. It's a thing that I can't let go of. It's a simple fact that Elijah was willing to lay himself over the boy. And look what happened. Something dead came to life. But when I read that, when he stretched himself out over the boy, I think, what am I willing to stretch my life out for? That's a hard question. We move, we step into places, we go into something new because we're believing, God, you have something for me. And then sometimes we sit there like, what is it? I don't know. Then I'm like, what am I laying myself down for and stretching my life over? I think that's even a better question. Matthew 16, verse 24 and 25 says, then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. These are really powerful words. They're very central to the gospel and the good news of Jesus. But it's also what we're called to do. And this is not the popular message of culture. And somewhere in my life, in church, this is not a judgment statement. I'm going to include myself right in it. But the self-seeking, the self-help of even being consumed by ourselves and how we're doing, how we're feeling, how our mental and emotional health is, has taken the top seat as we follow Jesus. But I don't see that in any of his words. I know that we'll be made well, and I'm all for us being healthy and thriving and being set free. But I do feel compelled because these words aren't something that I don't feel championed or part of our normal culture as we follow Christ, to deny ourselves. You know, it wasn't about just me. I'm going to coffee and I'm eating, you know, going to all the fun things. But like, I don't know how to do healthy relationship and healthy in the intimate spaces without someone denying themselves. I mean, even on the intimate space, like if we're going to do life together, or like, where are we going to eat tonight? Well, I know where I want to eat. Well, where are we going to live? I mean, Eric and I have to work these things out in life, and I know you have to with your family as well. And it works a lot better when you have people who would be willing to deny themselves and not just make everything about them. But then you go on the larger scale of life, of what we're about, and even as we follow Christ, how do you really follow Christ if you're the center of everything? But I know this sounds really mean, but I just, you know, I'm talking to myself. I invited you into my provoking, you guys. So Christ says at the starting point to deny ourselves, the Greek meaning, I'm not even going to try to say the word I did in the first service and it was just funny. It's an A word. There's a Greek word for deny, and meaning to deny, disown, disregard. The beginning of the Greek word starts with a preposition that suggests away from. To deny ourselves is really to turn away from ourselves for the sake of turning to God. And when we turn to God, the concerns of God, the desires of God, the love of God become primary to us. That is different than seeking to meet your needs and to fill your desires. So if you are in a place and you don't feel like all your deep desires are being met, maybe it's time to deny yourself. Maybe it's time for us to deny ourselves and to take up our cross, because we are Christians and we're following somebody who's not just ourselves. I feel compelled, and it's God is stirring something inside. And it's a strong statement. It's a picture of complete denial of one's desires and wishes. To follow Jesus is not just about us, our needs. He gave his life as a ransom for many, and that's who we're following. And this is what he asks. This is what he calls us into. And I know that I'm in a community of people that are generous. I don't have that against you. I'm so proud of you. And I want us to be healthy as we follow God, and even as we're just on the journey. I want us to be people who'd be willing to show up, whether it is in the mourning or the rejoicing. It's both sides, and both can be costly. It's interesting to rejoice with someone when you don't feel like rejoicing. But you do when you're all about being with them. And it's interesting to mourn when you don't feel like mourning. But sometimes we do that. We step into someone's story and just hold them while they grieve. Because love prefers one another. That's love in action. This is the gospel. It's spreading our lives over each other. It's being there, whether it be for celebrations, whether it be for moving, whether it be for taking a friend to the ER at 1 in the morning, not getting home till 1 in the morning, picking friends up at airports at 2 in the morning. I see you, D, no? It's really the honor and the joy that we get. Like, I want to be doing things that are not just gonna benefit me and that you can't pay me for. Like, I want you to always be finding me in those spaces. Because that's an honor. That's a joy, and it's a privilege to be a part of it. If I were to only build a life that was just around my comfort and things that I want and I need, that's not the life that we're called to build. And I don't believe that you find your deepest joy in those places either. I know you would think if you just had the bigger house and you had all the servants that your life would be so much better. And some of it might, but I don't know if it would meet all your deepest needs. Because there's something that we're created for that is almost the opposite. And something that we're called into that we all long for. There's two stories that I want to share that inspire me. And they're people who gave their lives. I think they laid their lives down over something that is so beautiful. It's inspiring. And when I say inspiring, it's not like I want to do the same thing, but I'm inspired to figure out what I can lay my life down for. And I know that can happen on a personal level. I can do it for my family. I can do it for my friends. But I also want to be able to do it for my neighborhoods, for my city, for things that are even greater for a generation. There are things I think we need to be asking that bigger question. What can I lay my life down for? The first one, there's a girl. She was born in 1910. At the age of 12, she felt strongly the call of God. She knew that she had to be a missionary to spread the love of Christ. She went in and taught a high school in Calcutta. But the suffering and poverty she glimpsed outside the covenant walls made such a deep impression on her that she received permission from her superiors to leave the convent school and devote herself to working among the poorest of the poor in the slums of Calcutta. What I love is you're already talking about a teacher who's giving her life to kids. But what bothered her was what was happening outside the walls of the school. That she changed direction and is like, what about them, God? And there's something about proximity that your senses, what you see, what you become aware of are really important. Because the Spirit of God is inside of you and you're made in His image. So when something's important to you, it's a big thing to bring Him like, Lord, is this it? And I love it. She's already giving to people and to kids and teaching. But she goes outside the walls, and the girl was Mother Teresa. She made a huge impact because of her dedication to the poorest in the world. Among other things, her organization, Missionaries of Charity, opened schools, orphanages, medical clinics, homes for the elderly, and homes for dying so they could die with dignity. This lady is one of my heroes. I love what she gave her life to. It inspires me to go and give my life for the things that God cares about, but also that He puts on my heart. The second one is an organization. It might be surprising to you that I include this one, but I always think if I wasn't pastoring, I would want to go either work at this organization or start an organization just like it because I see the benefit. I have benefited from it, but I see the benefit in community, and I'm so thankful for this organization. But it was the YMCA, and it was founded in London, England, on June 6, 1844. I love to read why these things got started because I feel like we're in a cultural moment in the middle of something transforming and God has put us here. And here's the other thing is this is a room full of leaders. For whatever reason, God has brought so many leaders to studio and I don't believe that you're here for nothing. And so many people moving to Greenville that are leaders and entrepreneurs and people who actually bring covering and new things to other people. And so I'm doing all this to stir us up, to stir us that we wouldn't be okay with whatever was because God is calling us into something new. And He's provoking us. But the YMCA was founded in London, England on June 6, 1844, in response to unhealthy social conditions arising in the big cities at the end of the Industrial Revolution. Growth of the railroads and centralization of commerce and industry brought many rural young men who needed jobs into cities like London. They worked 10 to 12 hour days, 6 days a week, far from home and families. These young men often lived at workplaces. They slept crowded into rooms over the company shop. Outside the shop, things were bad. Open sewers, pickpocketers, thugs, beggars, drunks, lovers for hire, and abandoned children running wild in by the thousands. YMCA began in response to unhealthy social conditions arising in big cities. It was George Williams was touched by what he saw. It was simply a man. A man touched by what he saw. So he gathered his friends and to organize a refuge for young men seeking escape from the hazards of the streets. I even went on one of the websites to just see what I would hear from their missions and values even now in the year 2024. And there were three separate banners going across the YMCA page. The first banner said, dedicated to today's youth. Second one, focused on healthy living. Third, driving social responsibility. I am just thankful for the people who decided to deny themselves and lay their lives down for other people, because we all benefit from it. There's one question that I have, and it's, who benefits when we deny ourselves and take up our cross? So that's a personal question for us all to answer. For you, and you, when you deny yourself and take up your cross, who benefits from it? These are things I want you to even think about when you go home, that we don't just come here and engage and listen, but actually digest that one a little bit, because I believe this will help us create a pathway forward. And the second one is, who does it cost when we don't do it? If I don't deny myself, who misses out? Because there are two different, those, what we choose does affect other people. And so if you want to stand, we're going to wrap up today. And there's a lot of questions that I have today. And I want to leave us with three questions. You don't have to answer them now, but I would like you to at least ask you to think about them or pray about them. And the first one is, who or what are you in proximity with? One of the big parts of the story of Elisha and the Shunammite is that he went there regularly. And it was because of that interaction, that relationship, that he was able to even give a word of promise, and she knew him as a man of God. So where do you go regularly, and who are you around? And then secondly, do you know the needs? Are you aware? Are you looking around? And that's the thing, if we don't deny ourselves, we can never look at anyone else. We never have eyes to see what else God could be doing, because we're so occupied with what we need or what we don't have. And so for us to follow Christ, we have to get to a place where we turn away from what we need and where we're at, and actually go and turn toward the Lord and seek his heart and seek his desires. And then we act and we follow him. And then lastly, what are you or what are we laying our lives down? Are we willing to lay our lives over for someone or something to see something come alive? That's what I'm provoked by today. And that's what I'd love to stir up in us, and even to spark questions to bring before the Lord and even yourselves. Because I dream of being a part of what God is doing here in Greenville, but here on the earth. And I know that we have said yes and we're in the middle of it, but I just want to say, let's keep going. Let's keep going, and let's follow Jesus and where he's at.
Thanks for listening to today's talk. If you're interested in learning more about Studio here in Greenville, you can go check out our website, studiogreenville.com, and you can give us a follow on Instagram. Our handle is studio.greenville. Have a great week.